This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Butte Report. Welcome to the Butte Report. Today is Thursday, March 25th, 2021. The Butte Report reports on and analyzes issues that affect our lives and our livelihood by focusing on local government, including the Board of Supervisors, the various municipalities, and even school districts and water districts within Butte County. I'm your host, Sue Hildebrand. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by ChicoCallCenter.com, employing locally since 1999. Chico Call Center is rapidly expanding and is now hiring new employees for their Nord Avenue location. Chico Call Center works with over 200 newspapers nationwide, renewing customer subscriptions. Compensation packages include hourly, commission, and nightly cash payouts. More information by visiting ChicoCallCenter.com. Tonight on the Butte Report, we'll cover the Butte County Board of Supervisors, the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, and the results from a state audit of in-home supportive services program that specifically focused on Butte County. Interviews include Supervisor Deborah Lucero and the chair of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, Angela McLaughlin. Starting with the Board of Supervisors meeting this week, a spontaneous mob appeared outside of the meeting chambers before the meeting started, demanding to be let in. Obviously, because of the global pandemic, government meetings have been conducted via online platforms around the country and around the world. Although Supervisor Connolly tried to explain their demands by stating that people get frustrated when they feel like they aren't being heard, all meetings have had virtual and real-time opportunities to participate in the public meetings. However, most meetings and most agenda items received little public input. County staff sought guidance from the board on how they should proceed in upcoming meetings. Supervisor Teeter suggested staff should research the cost of renting a larger room so the public could social distance. Chief Administrative Officer Andy Pickett said he would research the options and bring them back to the board in 2 weeks. In homeless news during the pandemic, the Board of Supervisors unanimously approved a $3 million budget adjustment on the expenses related to Project Room Key. Through the statewide Project Room Key, Butte County has provided non-congregate sheltering, meal delivery, and other services to vulnerable populations experiencing homelessness during the pandemic. Director Shelby Boston, Department of Employment and Social Services Director, reported that in Project Room Key, 87 people are currently being housed, 72 in the North County and 15 in South County. Since the beginning of the program nearly a year ago, a combined 502 people were Federal Emergency Management Agency qualified. In that time, 212 people have been successfully transferred to permanent or transitional housing. The approved budget adjustment comes from the general fund appropriation for contingencies, which has a current balance of just over $3 million. Turning to earmarks in the federal budget that will benefit Butte County, county staff reported that the U.S. Congress has reinstated a form of community project funding, previously referred to as earmarks, this coming fiscal year. The process provides funding directly to certain local projects in the annual federal appropriations bill. Congressional representatives by the House are required to submit projects for their consideration by the end of April and are limited to submitting 10 projects for the district they represent. Similar deadlines are expected to be set for the Senate as well. Fundings for projects must be spent within the federal fiscal year, which is September of 2022. And can target a variety of issue areas including transportation, water and sewage infrastructure, natural resources, public safety, and broadband. It is anticipated that projects which address natural mitigation or recovery, economic recovery and development, climate resiliency, and environmental justice will be prioritized. Staff offered a list of potential projects for consideration, such as the Palermo Drinking Water Project, a biomass project, and even money for libraries. Supervisor Deborah Lucero, whose entire district is in the city of Chico and has a high concentration of unsheltered people, stated that she is interested in seeking a federal planning grant for a regional health facility. I spoke with Lucero and started by asking her to talk about how these earmarks could benefit Butte County.
Well, first of all, it's rather exciting that earmarks are coming back at the federal level, which means that our local congressman can look at a list of projects for his vast district. These are small earmarks under really $1 million, typically maybe $2 million. So you have to have a project that fits within those parameters. And when I heard the amount of money, what I was suggesting is perhaps taking that under $1 million and looking at a regional mental health facility discussion in the North State. We need to begin to organize. And our own lobbyist advised us that, you know, if we were able to coordinate with counties around us, that is going to be a stronger, more appealing type of project to Congressman LaMalfa. So as I've said before on this show, I had approached Doug LaMalfa before I was even in office, after I'd been elected, and also Assemblyman Gallagher about the idea of a regional mental health facility north of Sacramento. And both of them were interested. Both of them suggested multi-county approach. So there is some benefit in doing this, especially at the federal level. So I'm excited that there is this pot of money that if we can get this discussion going north of Sacramento, I think would be money well spent. On top of that, I have learned, I've been attending the NACO Legislative Conference, and today, actually, we were given a presentation on what is called a Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic expansion. And these are happening all over the United States, and there are some core elements to them. They are community-based with staffing, 24-hour availability, no rejects for no reason whatsoever, care coordination. The scope of services include medical, health, substance abuse disorder, case management, rehabilitation, peer specialists, and family supports. And they're actually also adding to that childcare. They're looking at the quality of the care. They're looking at the governance and accreditation. And these are already, this is not a new idea. This is already happening across the United States. It's not in every state, but we do have 11 of these in the state of California. They are all in Southern California, with the exception of one, I believe, which is in San Francisco, I think is the closest. So I'm in the process of really looking at those, and I've even just brought them up to our own behavioral health department. So I think we have some possibilities. And what's really exciting is that the federal government is setting aside $2 million for establishing these programs. So if we could get that planning grant, and then we go after one of the federal grants of a $2 million grant, I think we could be well on our way to creating something new and different for the North State, something responsive to the problems that we actually have here.
Supervisor Lucero, your district is right in the heart of Chico, and you represent a major part of the homeless crisis here in Butte County. And I'm wondering if you can connect this regional health facilities, mental health facility, how that would go about addressing the homeless crisis.
Well, you know, I think that any successful project, having done projects myself for, over 20 years, I know that small starts can create great things. And there are examples across the country of these new type of clinics succeeding. And yesterday, during public comment, we actually had comments from two young Hmong women, teenagers actually, who were interested in behavioral health, mental health services for their population. And what is so exciting about this model that I'm talking about is that this is really a service expansion of what the county already does, but it gives clients more access to services. It collaborates with the jail and other county-based services, things that we're already doing. It offers therapy and groups for correction clients, which we know many of the people that are on the streets, about 50 of the 500 arrests that we have that fall into the behavioral health category, 50 of those clients account for 500 of those arrests. And these are the type of people we need to target with programs like this. It would work with public health. It would include prevention. And it would also incorporate the existing nonprofits. And it requires government to be more creative, which I think we need to be. So we have to think out of the box in order to address these issues that are definitely growing, and they are not getting better with what we have been doing. So we need to think differently. And I think that means meeting people where they are. And these smaller clinics, and I don't mean to say that they're smaller, but they're just not ordered in the same way that county services are ordered. For instance, in California, the names of the clinics that exist right now, they're like community service organizations. So there's the Korean Community Services in Buena Park. There's Uplift Family Services in Campbell. There's Chinatown Service Center in Los Angeles. There's Tessie Cleveland Community Services in LA, Southern California Health and Rehab Program. So you kind of are starting to feel the difference with this. La Maestra Family Clinic in San Diego, San Isidro Health Center in San Diego, and then there's the Santa Barbara Neighborhood Clinic. So it's a combination of medical services, family services, child care, behavioral health, addiction services. It's like a one-stop. If you think about one-stop for jobs, this is a one-stop for behavioral health as well as medical needs and just simply life skills.
And finally, Supervisor Lucero, it sounds like across the cities in Butte County, as well as the Board of Supervisors, there is this growing interest in a regional facility. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of, in the surrounding counties, if there is interest, do you have to make those connections and convince people that this is a good idea? And what is the time frame of when we might actually see this happen?
Well, I think if we can get this planning grant and begin the discussion, you know, a regional facility may look a little different. You know, if we want to get these up and running quickly, it may be smaller centers in our communities with staff that becomes mobile instead of people that need the services becoming mobile. That's kind of some of the new thinking around helping people. Think about trying to get someone on the street to Red Bluff, let's say, if that is where the clinic is. Those are some of the obstacles for people getting help, is literally transportation. So we need to be thinking creatively as a society, and we need to be more nimble in government and more creative. And I think that the federal government is recognizing this, and these new programs that they're calling the Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinics Expansion Projects are a good idea, and they seem to be working. They also showed some outcomes for these, and they were really rather incredible in terms of the outcomes. They looked at everyday functioning, illegal drug abstinence, regular employment, stable housing, hospitalization, and whether or not they were still involved, people that were in these programs were involved with criminal justice issues. And in every single category, they were exceeding expectations. And that's what has gotten the attention of therapists and clinicians across the country in this type of approach.
That was Butte County Supervisor Deborah Lucero. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Chico. Turning now to the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, this week the task force voted to end its collaboration with the city of Chico, weeks after council member Cammie Denley called for a discussion about the committee and possibly turning it into a city commission. The reasons for this move were unclear at the time and remain so, with many observers believing that this move is politically motivated. For background, the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force is a collaborative community group that includes service providers, city staff, and the general public. It has existed for over 25 years, and many community organizations in Chico today grew out of the task force, including the Torres Shelter and Chico Housing Action Team. According to its website, the mission of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force states, quote, "Because housing is a basic human right, the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force members will collaborate in order to problem solve, plan, advocate, and work together to remove barriers and increase access to safe and decent housing and supportive services for the homeless or those at risk of homelessness." The chair of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, Angela McLaughlin, explained why the task force did not want to become a formal city commission.
The major issue is compliance with the Brown Act, and the Brown Act is wonderful. The Brown Act ensures transparency for folks. However, the task force is a unique body in that it's a collaborative body. And so its entire purpose is to encourage collaboration between service providers, the city, and the general public. And so with Brown Act restrictions, it would intentionally discourage collaboration so that people aren't collaborating behind the scenes and there aren't things that are happening outside of the public's knowledge. And for service providers, that's a major issue because collaboration is necessary to their mission. They really have to collaborate. Each one has particular focus and things that they're good at and things, services that they can offer and services that they can't. And so they're ideally in constant communication, and any kind of chilling effect on that really affects their efficacy.
Right now, how is the task force organized?
It's intentionally extremely low barrier. Anybody can attend the meeting. The meetings are always public and they're always open. And service providers and the general public, you can attend one meeting and then request to become a member, either by email or verbally. And once you've made that request, you're a member and your vote counts just the same as if you were somebody from the city or if you were somebody that's affiliated with a service provider. So it's really unique that way.
Angela McLaughlin, now that the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force has decided to sever ties with the city of Chico, how will the work be affected? How much of an impact is that going to have on the work that you're doing now?
I don't foresee a major impact. I think that the one thing that will particularly affect us is Marie Demmer's experience. She's been involved with the task force for many, many years, and she's the housing specialist at the city of Chico. And she just brings a wealth of knowledge, not only of housing issues and homelessness issues, but funding sources and grant funds that come down. So we hope that she'll still be able to participate to some extent, but her participation has been really unique and special and brought a lot of important information to all task force members.
Currently, what are the major issues that the task force is working on, particularly now we're in the middle of a crisis?
So a number of members are working on tent camping. That's probably the preeminent issue right now. We've got so many folks that are camped at Comanche Creek and at Wind Chime. Those are the largest concentrations of folks. There are others camped elsewhere, but they've actually received 72-hour notices in the last couple of days, and they have no place to go. There are about 30 beds open at Torres, and they are expected to fill up. And so the prime initiative I think that folks are working on right now as well, there are a number of folks working on tiny homes, but that's not something that's going to happen immediately. That's down the road. It will be something that has to be approved by the city and zoning. zoning will affect those choices and options.
And then finally, how can the general public get involved in the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force?
You can follow us on Facebook, and you can message us there. If you search for Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, we will come right up. You can also send us an email at gchtfexecteam@gmail.com. And you can ask to be added to our mailing list, and we'll send you out an email with information to attend our meetings.
That was Angela McLaughlin, chair of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Chico. And finally, we turn to an audit of the In-Home Supportive Services Program, or IHSS, conducted by the California State Auditor. The assessment was directed by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, focused on the California Department of Social Services and four California counties, including Butte County. The purpose of the program audit is to ensure that all Californians who are elderly and of low income or who are disabled receive the services that would allow them to remain independently in their homes. The review of the program found that IHSS program serves more than 591,000 people, allowing them to avoid long-term care arrangements that would be much more costly to the state. However, the report found a growing number of recipients, tens of thousands each month, do not receive the services for which they qualify because the state and counties alike have failed to complete mandatory annual planning activities intended to ensure care for all recipients. The audit also found that the counties, including Butte County, generally do not process caregiver applications in a timely manner, nor do they ensure the timely provision of care for all recipients. The auditor's report concluded by stating that, quote, unless the state and counties address these deficiencies, the number of recipients who lack care will likely increase as the need for IHSS services grows. Additionally, the report stated caregivers throughout the state receive pay that is at or near minimum wage, and caregivers earn significantly less than living wage in each county. In fact, many caregivers who work full-time would qualify for public assistance. And finally, the audit found that the IHSS program's funding structure discourages counties from significantly raising wages. These low wages could make recruiting a sufficient number of caregivers challenging both currently and in the future, especially considering that a majority of the counties that responded to the auditor's survey indicate that they already lack enough caregivers to provide qualified recipients with all approved services. Shelby Boston, director of the County Department of Employment and Social Services, said she agrees with the assessment of the funding structure.
I agree that the state should take a look at the funding methodology to ensure that we do not have, as a county, a disincentive to provide appropriate wages to the providers in our community. I think that first and foremost is really what needs to happen. And I do agree that counties throughout the state of California, we all are implementing the requirements of IHSS to the best of our abilities. And to be honest, if the state said you need to do a plan per the regulations, every county in California is going to do exactly that. And Butte County would be no different.
To talk about the importance of the IHSS program and how it works, District 6 Vice President at United Domestic Workers, William Reed, explained.
Well, the IHSS program serves, as you said before, a little under 600,000 clients and almost an equal number of providers throughout the state of California. It's a very expensive program to fund, and that's one of the reasons we have so much difficulty in managing the program. It costs upwards to almost $14 billion annually to run this program. But it's a program to serve the blind, the disabled, the senior people within our communities. Right now, the major function is to keep people with disabilities and seniors in safely in their own homes and in part of the community, as opposed to being placed in institutions or group homes. And that's a vital service. We would like the seniors who have already contributed so much to our country and the development of our country, served in wars and birthed our nation, to live out their lives in their own homes as opposed to be isolated in institutions. And that is so important right now with the COVID-19 virus. The most worst place to be right now is to be in group nursing homes, as that's where the virus spreads quickly. But this program keeps people part of our community and actively involved with their families and friends. And that is so important. I've been a care provider for almost 40 years. I care for my son, and he's suffers from autism. He functions on a preschool level. He does not have conversational speech, and he's still in diapers. And I am his voice, and I'm his advocate. And there's so many people like him in the program. But we know that in order to enjoy a better quality of life, the best place for him to be is in his home, surrounded by good providers.
William Reed, you made a comment that suggested that this program really, in a very fundamental way, is about dignity for the client. And it's respect for, as you said, veterans of this country, but just the elderly. And you talked about it in terms of dignity. And I want to ask you to maybe go a little bit deeper into what you mean by that.
Well, dignity, because the best place for people is to be with home and family. The average age of a person in a nursing home is between 70 and 90 years old. But that person in a nursing home lives approximately 1.2 years. That person living in their own home, surrounded by family and home care providers, lives 7.2 years. It's a no-brainer.
How can listeners learn more about the IHSS program? And in particular, how can people learn about the work that you do at United Domestic Workers?
Well, we invite you to go on to our website, which is uniteddomesticworkers.org. Visit us on Facebook. Or call your local office. We have an office right here in Butte County. As well as if you go on the county website and look at the IHSS program on Health and Human Services, you will see the program there.
That was William Reed, District 6 Vice President at United Domestic Workers. This will be the last edition of the Butte Report. And next week, Chico News and Reviews on the Radio with Jason Cassidy will air at 5 p.m. This local news coverage will be incorporated into the weekly program, The Real Issue, starting at 6 p.m. on Wednesday nights. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food located at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. They're open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and details can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com, where we love food, flavor, and our community. Music by bensounds.com. Stay tuned for the Chico News and Review on the Radio with Jason Cassidy.